Gale sprang to the door and found it would no longer open. He could only dress and wait. They came for him and took him elsewhere, but it was still detention. They asked him questions, most politely. It was all very civilized. He explained that he was a provincial of Synax, that he had attended such and such schools and obtained a Doctor of Mathematics degree on such and such a date. He had applied for a position on Dr. Selden's staff and had been accepted. Over and over again he gave these details, and over again they returned to the question of his joining the Selden Project. How had he heard of it? What were to be his duties? What secret instructions had he received? What was it all about? He answered that he did not know. He had no secret instructions. He was a scholar and a mathematician. He had no interest in politics. And finally, the gentle inquisitor asked, "When will Trantor be destroyed?" Gale faltered. "Well, I could not say of my own knowledge." "Could you say of anyone's? How could I speak for another?" He felt warm, overwarm. The inquisitor said, "Has anyone told you of such destruction, set a date?" And, as the young man hesitated, he went on, "You have been followed, Doctor. We were at the airport when you arrived, on the observation tower when you waited for your appointment, and, of course, we were able to overhear your conversation with Dr. Selden." Gale said, "Then you know his views on the matter?" "Perhaps, but we would like to hear them from you." "He is of the opinion that Trantor would be destroyed within 5 centuries."
"He proved it, mathematically?"
"Yes, he did," defiantly.
"You maintain the mathematics to be valid, I suppose?"
"If Dr. Selden vouches for it, it is valid."
"Then we will return."
"Wait, I have a right to a lawyer. I demand my rights as an imperial citizen."
"You shall have them."
And he did. It was a tall man that eventually entered, a man whose face seemed all vertical lines, and so thin that one could wonder whether there was room for a smile. Gale looked up. He felt disheveled and wilted. So much had happened, yet he had been on Trantor not more than 30 hours. The man said, "I am Loras Evakim. Dr. Selden has directed me to represent you." "Is that so? Well, then look here. I demand an instant appeal to the Emperor. I am being held without cause. I'm innocent of anything, of anything." He slashed his hands outward, palms down. "You've got to arrange a hearing with the Emperor instantly."
Evakim was carefully emptying the contents of a flat folder onto the floor. If Gale had had the stomach for it, he might have recognized Selamet legal forms, metal-thin and tape-like, adapted for insertion within the smallness of a personal capsule. He might also have recognized a pocket recorder. Evakim, paying no attention to Gale's outburst, finally looked up. He said,
"The Commission will, of course, have a spy beam on our conversation. This is against the law, but they will use one, nevertheless."
Gale ground his teeth.
"However," and Evakim seated himself deliberately, "the recorder I have on the table, which is a perfectly ordinary recorder to all appearances and performs its duties well, has the additional property of completely blanketing the spy beam. This is something they will not find out at once." "Then I can speak?"
"Of course."
"Then I want a hearing with the Emperor."
Evakim smiled frostily, and it turned out there was room for it on his thin face after all.
His cheeks wrinkled to make the room. He said, "You are from the provinces." "I am nonetheless an imperial citizen, as good a one as you or any of this Commission of Public Safety."
"No doubt, no doubt. It is merely that as a provincial you do not understand life on Trantor as it is. There are no hearings before the Emperor."
"To whom else would one appeal from this commission? Is there other procedure?"
"None. There is no recourse in a practical sense. Legalistically, you may appeal to the Emperor, but you would get no hearing. The Emperor today is not the Emperor of an infant dynasty, you know. Trantor, I'm afraid, is in the hands of the aristocratic families, members of which compose the Commission of Public Safety. This is a development which is well predicted by psychohistory."
Gale said, "Indeed. In that case, if Dr. Selden can predict the history of Trantor 500 years into the future,
he can predict it 1,500 years into the future.
Let it be 15,000. Why couldn't he yesterday have predicted the events of this morning and warned me?"
"No, I'm sorry." Gale sat down and rested his head in one sweating palm.
"I quite understand that psychohistory is a statistical science and cannot predict the future of a single man with any accuracy. You'll understand that I'm upset."
"But you are wrong. Dr. Selden was of the opinion that you would be arrested this morning."
"What?"
"It is unfortunate, but true. The Commission has been more and more hostile to his activities. New members joining the group have been interfered with to an increasing extent. The graphs showed that, for our purposes, matters might best be brought to a climax now. The Commission of itself was moving somewhat slowly, so Dr. Selden visited you yesterday for the purpose of forcing their hand. No other reason."
Gale caught his breath.
I resent...
Please, it was necessary. You were not picked for any personal reasons. You must realize that Dr. Selden's plans, which are laid out with the developed mathematics of over 1,800 years, include all eventualities with significant probabilities. This is one of them. I have been sent here for no other purpose than to assure you that you need not fear. It will end well, almost certainly so for the project, and with reasonable probability for you.
What are the figures? Demanded Gale.
For the project, over 99.9%.
And for myself?
I am instructed that this probability is 77.2%.
Then I've got better than one chance in five of being sentenced to prison or to death?
The last is under 1%.
Indeed.
Calculations upon one man mean nothing.
You send Dr. Selden to me.
Unfortunately, I cannot. Dr. Selden is himself arrested. The door was thrown open before the rising Gale could do more than utter the beginning of a cry. A guard entered, walked to the table, picked up the recorder, looked upon all sides of it, and put it in his pocket. Evakim said quietly, I will need that instrument.
We will supply you with one, Counselor, that does not cast a static field.
My interview is done in that case. Gale watched him leave and was alone. 6. The trial, Gale supposed it to be one, though it bore little resemblance legalistically to the elaborate trial techniques Gale had read of, had not lasted long. It was in its third day, yet already Gale could no longer stretch his memory back far enough to embrace its beginning. He himself had been but little pecked at. The heavy guns were trained on Dr. Selden himself. Harry Selden, however, sat there unperturbed. To Gale, he was the only spot of stability remaining in the world. The audience was small and drawn exclusively from among the barons of the Empire. Press and public were excluded, and it was doubtful that any significant number of outsiders even knew that a trial of Selden was being conducted. The atmosphere was one of unrelieved hostility toward the defendants. 5 of the Commission of Public Safety sat behind the raised desk. They wore scarlet and gold uniforms, and the shining, close-fitting plastic caps that were the sign of their judicial function. In the center was the Chief Commissioner, Ling Chen. Gale had never before seen so great a lord, and he watched him with fascination. Chen, throughout the trial, rarely said a word. He made it quite clear that much speech was beneath his dignity. The commission's advocate consulted his notes, and the examination continued, with Selden still on the stand. Question. Let us see, Dr. Selden. How many men are now engaged in the project of which you are head? Answer. 50 mathematicians. Question. Including Dr. Gale Dornick? Answer. Dr. Dornick is the 51st. Question. Oh, we have 51, then. Search your memory, Dr. Selden. Perhaps there are 52 or 53, or perhaps even more. Answer. Dr. Dornick has not yet formally joined my organization. When he does, the membership will be 51. It is now 50, as I have said. Question. Not perhaps nearly 100,000? Answer. Mathematicians? No. Question. I did not say mathematicians. Are there 100,000 in all capacities? Answer. In all capacities, your figure may be correct. Question. Maybe. I say it is. I say that the men in your project number 98,572. Answer. I believe you are counting women and children. Question. Raising his voice. 98,572 individuals is the intent of my statement. There is no need to quibble. Answer. I accept the figures. Question. Referring to his notes. Let us drop that for the moment, then, and take up another matter which we have already discussed at some length. Would you repeat, Dr. Selden, your thoughts concerning the future of Trantor? Answer. I have said, and I say again, that Trantor will lie in ruins within the next 5 centuries. Question. You do not consider your statement a disloyal one? Answer. No, sir. Scientific truth is beyond loyalty and disloyalty. Question. You are sure that your statement represents scientific truth? Answer. I am. Question. On what basis? Answer. On the basis of the mathematics of psychohistory. Question. Can you prove that this mathematics is valid? Answer. Only to another mathematician. Question. With a smile. Your claim, then, is that your truth is of so esoteric a nature that it is beyond the understanding of a plain man. It seems to me that truth should be clearer than that, less mysterious, more open to the mind. Answer. It presents no difficulties to some minds. The physics of energy transfer, which we know as thermodynamics, has been clear and true through all the history of man since the mythical ages, yet there may be people present who would find it impossible to design a power engine. People of high intelligence, too. I doubt if the learned commissioners... At this point, one of the commissioners leaned toward the advocate. His words were not heard, but the hissing of the voice carried a certain asperity. The advocate flushed and interrupted Selden. Question. We are not here to listen to speeches, Dr. Selden. Let us assume that you have made your point. Let me suggest to you that your predictions of disaster might be intended to destroy public confidence in the imperial government for purposes of your own. Answer. That is not so. Question. Let me suggest that you intend to claim that a period of time preceding the so-called ruin of Trantor will be filled with unrest of various types. Answer. That is correct. Question. And that by the mere prediction thereof, you hope to bring it about, and have then an army of 100,000 available. Answer. In the first place, that is not so. And if it were, investigation will show you that barely 10,000 are men of military age, and none of these has training in arms. Question. Are you acting as an agent for another? Answer. I am not in the pay of any man, Mr. Advocate. Question. You are entirely disinterested? You are serving science? Answer. I am. Question. Then let us see how. Can the future be changed, Dr. Selden? Answer. Obviously. This courtroom may explode in the next few hours, or it may not. If it did, the future would undoubtedly be changed in some minor respects. Question. You quibble, Dr. Selden. Can the overall history of the human race be changed? Answer. Yes. Question. Easily? Answer. No. With great difficulty. Question. Why? Answer. The psychohistoric trend of a planet full of people contains a huge inertia. To be changed, it must be met with something possessing a similar inertia. Either as many people must be concerned, or if the number of people be relatively small, enormous time for change must be allowed. Do you understand? Question. I think I do. Trantor need not be ruined if a great many people decide to act so that it will not. Answer. That is right. Question. As many as 100,000 people? Answer. No, sir. That is far too few. Question. You are sure? Answer. Consider that Trantor has a population of over 40 billions. Consider further that the trend leading to ruin does not belong to Trantor alone, but to the Empire as a whole, and the Empire contains nearly a quintillion human beings. Question. I see. Then perhaps 100,000 people can change the trend if they and their descendants labor for 500 years. Answer. I'm afraid not. 500 years is too short a time. Question. Ah. In that case, Dr. Selden, we are left with this deduction to be made from your statements. You have gathered 100,000 people within the confines of your project. These are insufficient to change the history of Trantor within 500 years. In other words, they cannot prevent the destruction of Trantor no matter what they do? Answer. You are, unfortunately, correct. Question. And, on the other hand, your 100,000 are intended for no illegal purpose? Answer. Exactly. Question. Slowly and with satisfaction. In that case, Dr. Selden, now attend, sir, most carefully, for we want a considered answer. What is the purpose of your 100,000? The advocate's voice had grown strident. He had sprung his trap, backed Selden into a corner, driven him astutely from any possibility of answering. There was a rising buzz of conversation at that, which swept the ranks of the peers in the audience and invaded even the row of commissioners. They swayed toward one another in their scarlet and gold, only the chief remaining uncorrupted. Harry Selden remained unmoved. He waited for the babble to evaporate. Answer. To minimize the effects of that destruction. Question. And exactly what do you mean by that? Answer. The explanation is simple. The coming destruction of Trantor is not an event in itself, isolated in the scheme of human development. It will be the climax to an intricate drama which was begun centuries ago and which is accelerating in pace continuously. I refer, gentlemen, to the developing decline and fall of the Galactic Empire. The buzz now became a dull roar. The advocate, unheeded, was yelling, "You are openly declaring that," and stopped because the cries of treason from the audience showed that the point had been made without any hammering. Slowly, the chief commissioner raised his gavel once and let it drop. The sound was that of a mellow gong. When the reverberation ceased, the gavel of the audience also did. The advocate took a deep breath. Question, theatrically. Do you realize, Dr. Selden, that you are speaking of an empire that has stood for 12,000 years through all the vicissitudes of the generations, and which has behind it the good wishes and love of a quadrillion human beings? Answer. I am aware both of the present status and the past history of the empire. Without disrespect, I must claim a far better knowledge of it than any in this room. Question. And you predict its ruin? Answer. It is a prediction which is made by mathematics. I pass no moral judgment. Personally, I regret the prospect. Even if the empire were admitted to be a bad thing, an admission I do not make, the state of anarchy which would follow its fall would be worse. It is that state of anarchy which my project is pledged to fight. The fall of empire, gentlemen, is a massive thing, however, and not easily fought. It is dictated by a rising bureaucracy, a receding initiative, a freezing of caste, a damming of curiosity, 100 other factors. It has been going on, as I have said, for centuries, and it is too majestic and massive a movement to stop. Question. Is it not obvious to anyone that the empire is as strong as it ever was? Answer. The appearance of strength is all about you. It would seem to last forever. However, Mr. Advocate, the rotten tree trunk, until the very moment when the storm blast breaks it in two, has all the appearance of might it ever had. The storm blast whistles through the branches of the empire even now. Listen with the ears of psychohistory, and you will hear the creaking. Question. Uncertainly. We are not here, Dr. Selden, to answer firmly. The empire will vanish, and all its good with it. Its accumulated knowledge will decay, and the order it has imposed will vanish. Interstellar wars will be endless. Interstellar trade will decay. Population will decline. Worlds will lose touch with the main body of the galaxy. And so matters will remain. Question. A small voice in the middle of a vast silence. Forever? Answer. Psychohistory, which can predict the fall, can make statements concerning the succeeding Dark Ages. The Empire, gentlemen, as has just been said, has stood 12,000 years. The Dark Ages to come will endure not 12, but 30,000 years. A second empire will rise, but between it and our civilization will be 1,000 generations of suffering humanity. We must fight that. Question, recovering somewhat. You contradict yourself. You said earlier that you could not prevent the destruction of Trantor, hence presumably the fall, the so-called fall of the empire. Answer. I do not say now that we can prevent the fall, but it is not yet too late to shorten the interregnum which will follow. It is possible, gentlemen, to reduce the duration of anarchy to a single millennium if my group is allowed to act now. We are at a delicate moment in history. The huge, onrushing mass of events must be deflected just a little, just a little. It cannot be much, but it may be enough to remove 29,000 years of misery from human history. Question. How do you propose to do this? Answer. By saving the knowledge of the race. The sum of human knowing is beyond any one man, any thousand men. With the destruction of our social fabric, science will be broken into a million pieces. Individuals will know much of exceedingly tiny facets of what there is to know. They will be helpless and useless by themselves. The bits of lore, meaningless, will not be passed on. They will be lost through the generations. But if we now prepare a giant summary of all knowledge, it will never be lost. Coming generations will build on it and will not have to rediscover it for themselves. One millennium will do the work of 30,000. Question. All this? Answer. All my project, my 30,000 men with their wives and children, are devoting themselves to the preparation of an Encyclopedia Galactica. They will not complete it in their lifetimes. I will not even live to see it fairly begun. But by the time Trantor falls, it will be complete, and copies will exist in every major library in the galaxy. The Chief Commissioner's gavel rose and fell. Harry Selden left the stand and quietly took a seat next to Gale. He smiled and said, "How did you like the show?" Gale said, "You stole it. But what will happen now?" "They'll adjourn the trial and try to come to a private agreement with me."
"How do you know?"
Selden said, "I'll be honest, I don't know. It depends on the Chief Commissioner. I have studied him for years. I have tried to analyze his workings. But you know how risky it is to introduce the vagaries of an individual in the psychohistoric equations. Yet, I have hopes." 7. Abakim approached, nodded to Gale, leaned over to whisper to Selden. The cry of adjournment rang out, and guards separated them. Gale was led away. The next day's hearings were entirely different. Harry Selden and Gale Dornick were alone with the commission. They were seated at a table together, with scarcely a separation between the five judges and the two accused. They were even offered cigars from a box of iridescent plastic which had the appearance of water, endlessly flowing. The eyes were fooled into seeing the motion, although the fingers reported it to be hard and dry. Selden accepted one. Gale refused. Selden said, "My lawyer is not present." A commissioner replied, "This is no longer a trial, Dr. Selden. We are here to discuss the safety of the state." Ling Chen said, "I will speak." And the other commissioners sat back in their chairs, prepared to listen. A silence formed about Chen, into which he might drop his words. Gale held his breath. Chen, lean and hard, older in looks than in fact, was the actual emperor of all the galaxy. The child who bore the title itself was only a symbol manufactured by Chen, and not the first such either. Chen said, "Dr. Selden, you disturbed the peace of the emperor's realm. None of the quadrillions living now among all the stars of the galaxy will be living a century from now. Why, then, should we concern ourselves with events of 5 centuries' distance?" "I shall not be alive half a decade hence," said Selden, "and yet it is of overpowering concern to me. Call it idealism, call it an identification of myself with that mystical generalization to which we refer by the term man. I do not wish to take the trouble to understand mysticism. Can you tell me why I may not rid myself of yourself and of an uncomfortable and unnecessary 5-century future, which I will never see, by having you executed tonight?" "A week ago," said Selden lightly, "you might have done so, and perhaps retained a 1 in 10 probability of yourself remaining alive at year's end. Today, the 1 in 10 probability is scarcely 1 in 10,000. There were expired breaths in the gathering and uneasy stirrings. Gale felt the short hairs prickle on the back of his neck. Chen's upper eyelids dropped a little. "How so?" he said. "The fall of Trantor," said Selden, "cannot be stopped by any conceivable effort. It can be hastened easily, however. The tale of my interrupted trial will spread through the galaxy. Frustration of my plans to lighten the disaster will convince people that the future holds no promise to them. Already they recall the lives of their grandfathers with envy. They will see that political revolutions and trade stagnations will increase. The feeling will pervade the galaxy that only what a man can grasp for himself at that moment will be of any account. Ambitious men will not wait, and unscrupulous men will not hang back. By their every action, they will hasten the decay of the worlds. Have me killed, and Trantor will fall not within 5 centuries, but within 50 years, and you yourself within a single year." Chen said, "These are words to frighten children, and yet your death is not the only answer which will satisfy us." He lifted his slender hand from the papers on which it rested so that only 2 fingers touched lightly upon the topmost sheet. "Tell me," he said, "will your only activity be that of preparing this encyclopedia you speak of?" "It will." "And need that be done on Trantor?" "Trantor, my lord, possesses the Imperial Library, as well as the scholarly resources of the University of Trantor. And yet, if you were located elsewhere, let us say upon a planet where the hurry and distractions of a metropolis will not interfere with scholastic musings, where your men may devote themselves entirely and single-mindedly to their work, might that not have advantages?" "Minor ones, perhaps." "Such a world has been chosen, then. You may work, Doctor, at your leisure, with your 100,000 about you. The galaxy will know that you are working and fighting the fall. They will even be told that you will prevent the fall." He smiled. "Since I do not believe in so many things, it is not difficult for me to disbelieve in the fall as well, so that I am entirely convinced I will be telling the truth to the people. And meanwhile, Doctor, you will not trouble Trantor, and there will be no disturbance of the Emperor's peace. The alternative is death for yourself, and for as many of your followers as will seem necessary. Your earlier threats I disregard. The opportunity for choosing between death and exile is given you over a time period stretching from this moment to 1 5-minute hence."
"Which is the world chosen, my lord?" said Selden.
"It is called, I believe, Terminus," said Chen. Negligently he turned the papers upon his desk with his fingertips so that they faced Selden. "It is uninhabited, but quite habitable, and can be molded to suit the necessities of scholars. It is somewhat secluded." Selden interrupted. "It is at the edge of the galaxy, sir." "As I have said, somewhat secluded. It will suit your needs for concentration. Come, you have 2 minutes left." Selden said, "We will need time to arrange such a trip. There are 20,000 families involved." "You will be given time." Selden thought a moment, and the last minute began to die. He said, "I accept exile." Gale's heart skipped a beat at the words. For the most part, he was filled with a tremendous joy, for who would not be to escape death? Yet in all his vast relief, he found space for a little regret that Selden had been defeated. 8. For a long while, they sat silently as the taxi whined through the hundreds of miles of worm-like tunnels toward the university. And then Gale stirred. He said, "Was what you told the commissioner true? Would your execution have really hastened the fall?" Selden said, I never lie about psychohistoric findings, nor would it have availed me in this case. Chen knew I spoke the truth. He is a very clever politician, and politicians, by the very nature of their work, must have an instinctive feeling for the truths of psychohistory.
Then need you have accepted exile?
Gale wondered, but Selden did not answer. When they burst out upon the university grounds, Gale's muscles took action of their own, or rather, inaction. He had to be carried almost out of the taxi. All the university was a blaze of light. Gale had almost forgotten that a sun could exist, nor was the university in the open. Its buildings were covered by a monstrous dome of glass and yet not glass. It was polarized so that Gale could look directly upon the blazing star above. Yet its light was undimmed, and it glanced off the metal buildings as far as the eye could see. The university structures themselves lacked the hard steel gray of the rest of Trantor. They were silvery, rather. The metallic luster was almost ivory in color. Selden said, Soldiers, it seems.
What?
Gale brought his eyes to the prosaic ground and found a sentinel ahead of them. They stopped before him, and a soft-spoken captain materialized from a nearby doorway. He said, Dr. Selden?
Yes.
We have been waiting for you. You and your men will be under martial law henceforth. I have been instructed to inform you that 6 months will be allowed you for preparations to leave for Terminus.
6 months?
Began Gale, but Selden's fingers were upon his elbow with gentle pressure. These are my instructions, repeated the captain. He was gone, and Gale turned to Selden.
Why, what can be done in 6 months? This is but slower murder.
Quietly, quietly, let us reach my office. It was not a large office, but it was quite spy-proof, and quite undetectably so. Spy beams trained upon it received neither a suspicious silence nor an even more suspicious static. They received, rather, a conversation constructed at random out of a vast stock of innocuous phrases in various tones and voices. Now, said Selden, at his ease, 6 months will be enough.
I don't see how.
Because, my boy, in a plan such as ours, the actions of others are bent to our needs. Have I not said to you already that Chen's temperamental makeup has been subjected to greater scrutiny than that of any other single man in history? The trial was not allowed to begin until the time and circumstances were right for the ending of our own choosing.
But could you have arranged?
To be exiled to Terminus? Why not? He put his fingers on a certain spot on his desk, and a small section of the wall behind him slid aside. Only his own fingers could have done so, since only his particular print pattern could have activated the scanner beneath. You will find several microfilms inside, said Selden. Take the one marked with the letter T. Gale did so, and waited while Selden fixed it within the projector and handed the young man a pair of eyepieces. Gale adjusted them and watched the film unroll before his eyes. He said,
But then...
Selden said, What surprises you?
Had you been preparing to leave for 2 years?
2.5. Of course, we could not be certain that it would be Terminus he would choose, but we hoped it might be, and we acted upon that assumption.
But why, Dr. Selden? If you arranged the exile, why? Could not events be far better controlled here on Trantor?
This book is continued on cassette number 2, side 1.